The documentation of both George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery's deaths through cell phone video are part of a larger tradition in protest movements to use technology to prove that allegations of racism and police brutality are real. But the frequency of watching these types of videos can also become a psychological burden. Alyssa Richardson has studied the use of technology in activist movements. She's also a professor at the University of Southern California and author of Bearing Witness While Black, African Americans, Smartphones, and the New Protest Journalism. She joins us now via Skype. Hello and welcome.
Thank you, Tanya, for having me.
Yes. So Professor Richardson, you recently wrote an article making the case for treating video and images of Black death like that of Ahmaud Arbery and George Floyd as sacred. And you note that there's a distinction between social justice and exploitation. Can you say more about this?
Yes, there's a very fine line between using these photographs to further or advance social justice and re-traumatizing African-American communities. When I was doing the research for my book, Bearing Witness While Black, I found three overlapping eras of domestic terror against African-Americans. And during those times, witnessing was used. So I really identify and talk readily about slavery, which then gave way to lynching, which then gave way to the police brutality that we see today. And through each of these overlapping eras, you have Black witnesses who were using technology of the day to report on those injustices, but they were never bandied about in the way that we are constantly scrolling through and stepping over these videos so casually online. And so my essay really called for us to be more thoughtful about that.
I want to talk with you more about that. I also want to delve a little more deeply into your research, which really makes the point that technology and emergent forms of journalism, as you just said, have always been a crucial way for Black Americans to advance civil rights. I'm thinking very specifically about the role that television played during the civil rights movement in the 60s. When I was in journalism school, one thing that really stood out to me was how being able to see racists on television and that moral equivalency that journalists were given to both racists who were spewing hate speech against Black voices asking for basic human rights, the power of that in actually changing the trajectory of that movement at the time. Can you talk more about that?
Absolutely. And I love that you bring up that example, Tanya, because it goes back even farther than that. The slave narratives were the first accurate accounts, first person, of what happened during that horrible time in our history. And Frederick Douglass was the foremost orator and author of that moment. And when he shared what was going on and was one of the most photographed Americans during that time, white Americans, many joined that abolitionist movement with him. One of the things that's most interesting is as you travel through time, you see people like Ida B. Wells, who kept what's called her red record. And she used those newspapers and the magazine called The Crisis, which was the official vein of the NAACP, to show the pictures from really atrocious lynchings. And those kinds of photographs help move the needle in the conversation about just human rights injustices against Black people. And as you begin to come up to more modern times, absolutely, television was an incredible tool to the civil rights movement, because we have to remember that back then, televised news only lasted 15 minutes. We didn't have 24-hour news cycles. And so people like John Lewis and Ann Nash of SNCC knew to use those precious 15 minutes to highlight a sit-in, a march, or any kind of other public demonstration. And they were masterful. They even had their own agency where they would sell their pictures to newspapers and other organizations of their demonstrations. And so they're the first modern Black witnesses in this way. If we think about the 1990s, the very first instance of a handheld camera and not a news camera capturing police brutality would be that of George Holliday using his camera to film Rodney King's beating in 1991. And so from there, there's a huge gap in terms of what we regard as mobile journalists. And in 2009, we have the horrific footage surface of Oscar Grant being shot on a BART platform on New Year's Day. And so that's kind of the trajectory historically of where Bearing Witness While Black has gotten us. We have seen through Black people's lenses for all of these years what's been going on.
Can we talk a little bit more about the murkiness, though, that can emerge? You mentioned the toll that it takes on us seeing these images around the clock. But then what happens, the psychological toll that takes place when the outcomes of us witnessing all of this may not bore out when it goes to the court of law. So several years ago, I did a piece where I sat down with a former police officer and a prosecutor, and we looked at several cell phone videos and police camera videos of what looked like really aggressive actions with police against citizens. And pretty consistently with every video, the police officer and the prosecutor saw different things. The prosecutor was looking for what she could not see, and the officer made the argument that what we were witnessing was in many cases resisting arrest. There are limitations to what video can tell us. Can you talk about this a little bit more?
Absolutely. And if we think back to the Rodney King case, the jury was exposed to slowed down versions of the video. And so the impact and a lot the horror that you saw in that video was blunted when it was picked apart, slowed down, edited, shown without audio. All of these things are documented as having an effect on jurors in terms of being able to question whether that beating was justified or not. We're now entering that same phase as we talk about deep fakes and we think about people feigning certain things. You have people who don't want to believe that these things still exist in the form of police brutality. And you have people asking, well, what happened before the camera started rolling? Did this person actually deserve their demise? And African Americans, in some ways, are the only group that is asked to defend or prove or disprove that they didn't hasten their own demise in some action that appeared off camera. So the danger of relying on these videos too closely is that we can be putting an additional burden on African Americans to show that unless they have that ocular proof, that nothing actually happened. And we only need look toward these cases of Ahmaud Arbery, for example. No one was arrested for 10 whole weeks until a video surfaced. It should not take that much. We should be able to believe Black people the first time, but we're still not at a point where, as a society, if a video does exist, there's no outcry. I think that's part of the trauma that African Americans are experiencing, because on the one hand, while they don't want to see people who look like them beaten over and over again or killed on live television, they do understand that for a broader public, sometimes that is what is necessary to move that needle. And so the trauma that we're talking about is that many African Americans are no longer looking at these videos. They can participate and acknowledge and support a movement without subjecting themselves to that.
I want to ask you about something else. Technology can also be used as a tool of surveillance. We've heard reports that cities are using contact tracing. We know phones track where we are, and social media platforms can be surveilled as well, as interfered with. In your work, how have you seen activists and citizen journalists countering this? I mean, we actually saw some of this in Hong Kong.
Absolutely. One of the gifts of smartphone technology is that you can show who's actually on the ground and show that perhaps, like we've seen in these past few days, it's not just African Americans who are looting or destroying property, that there are outside actors participating too. So that's one benefit. But the downside to that is the increased surveillance that many state-sponsored agencies are using to make sure that they're following up with anyone that they see on the ground, whether they're engaging in peaceful protest or not. There's a number of facial recognition tools that are being used and matched against for people's social media profiles to make arrests after a protest, whether it's peaceful or not. There's also additional technology that can scan for shoes. And so you're seeing a lot of activists on social media ask, please blur the faces of people and their shoes if you're going to highlight a peaceful protest or take pictures of where you were. And so in the book, I talk about a couple of activists that I actually interviewed who said they were called by their Twitter handle by different police departments as soon as they arrived on the scene. And they said, wow, we are really being surveilled. I'm not even being called by my official name. I'm being called by my Twitter handle. And so there, that's documented in terms of how that's being used. There's also a lot of declassified information that's starting to come out of protesters from the Ferguson uprisings, how they were tracked and trailed for months, even after protests dissipated. So there is a very real risk for bearing witness while Black. It's not something that we should dismiss casually, especially as the witnesses are getting younger and younger. I am very proud of the work that 17-year-old Darnella Frazier undertook when she dared to film George Floyd's killing. I'm also worried, you know, what we're doing to our young witnesses who are going to be subjected to all kinds of harassment.
That's Alyssa Richardson, professor at the University of Southern California and author of Bearing Witness While Black, African Americans, Smartphones, and the New Protest Journalism. Thank you so much.
Thank you.